How to Make Your Marriage Come Alive, the 2 million bestseller book that's even listed in all places, the Lutheran magazine, as one of the best-selling religious books of the year. I've written my letter of protest to Lutheran magazine, to the Lutheran, for describing it in such a manner. It may be a best-selling book. I doubt if it's really a best-selling religious book of the season. The Total Woman by Maribel Morgan. I don't have another counterpart of it called Fascinating Womanhood by Helen Andelin, which I believe operates in the same, presents some of the same kind of information. And it's no surprise that a book like this can come out and be such a bestseller when you look at a lot of the kind of advertisements that you see in some of our very common magazines. Anything that is to sell has to be related to sexy. And this is a lovely woman. Clean is sexy. And then it talks about a cover-up makeup. And this is the basic component of the total woman, dealing with our sexiness. An interesting comment by Martin Marty, who is a Lutheran theologian and professor at the University of Chicago, says in a recent Red Book article, about the total woman, a book that combines sexiness with spirituality. The Total Woman becomes an overwhelming bestseller, primarily to women living in the Bible Belt. He calls it the worst book in years. And he says it's a way of telling women how to get their jollies by being submissive and materialistic. It is selling so well because there are people who want to be told that they are getting their jollies for Jesus, which is the message of this book. I think that's rather interesting for State Professor Marty to come out on this. The title of this session is The Total Woman Revisited. Joanne and I have both read Total Woman. I have sat through a Total Woman seminar. I have pages of notes because I didn't think anyone would believe some of my feelings on it if they didn't see it having actually come from the session. There are many things, I think, for those of you who have read it, will agree that there are some good pointers in it. Any book, you can find some positive good. And as you look through, it talks about loving yourself. That's certainly a very important issue. It's not new with Maribel Morgan, however. It's been told to us for a long time, including in the Bible, to love ourselves. And when we know what it is to love oneself, then we're able to love someone else. One of the important things that I would like to say, and then Joanne and I will share some of our own feelings, and we'd like to have you share some of your comments and to ask questions and to participate as well. To look at the total woman and to look at its basic premise of submission, of putting yourself into a kind of second-class citizenship where you spend a good amount of your time trying to figure out ways to control or to develop or to entice or to role play. As one reviewer said, I can just imagine the day that I go to the front door wrapped in my saran wrap costume, opening the door only to find the TV repairman there except my husband. William Masters and Virginia Johnson make the statement that one of the basic difficulties with a book such as Total Woman or Fascinating Womanhood is that they fail to recognize the fact that poor communication between a husband and wife is a problem that can be crucial to their relationship. Neither book offers information that a woman might share with her husband so that together they could adapt it to the uniqueness of their own marriage. Actually, these books contain ground rules for a separateness between husbands and wives, not for sharing. Yet there is a growing body of evidence indicating that when a husband and wife try to solve their problems together, they are much more likely to succeed than if either assumes the burden alone. And these books intend to prepare husbands and wives in a sense, not saying it in actuality, but the kind of rules that are given to women of how you prepare this and how you look at this, is in a sense preparing them to be adversaries rather than partners committed by mutual respect and love. A woman's place is clearly defined. She's presumably submissive to her husband in all things, but actually is always in control behind the scenes, and she's quite specifically in control of her husband's sexual conduct and behavior. From the kind of recommendations that are given in Total Woman. Total Woman talks about the four A's, the admire, the accept, the adapt, the appreciate, all which are very good if it's a kind of shared admiring, a shared adaption, a shared appreciation, a shared acceptance. Maribel Morgan's husband is quoted as saying, if he were to write a book on the total man, he would talk about some of the same things, except he would not include adapt, because a husband should never, you would never be able to tell a husband to adapt to his wife. A wife adapts to her husband, but it's not reciprocal. When I look at Total Woman, I look at it in terms of marriage ideals of the 19th century. And as Martin Marty goes on to say, it's not going back to the good old days, it's going back to the worst old days. One of the other areas that I find some difficulty with is that it puts Joanne into a position of being a nonentity. That Total Woman says, if you are a total woman, you are a married woman. And that if you haven't made that status, then you haven't arrived as a woman. And I think that goes again, that's one of the reasons why I'm against it, is being listed as a religious book. Not that any religious book has to be all accurate, but that goes against the whole teachings, as I believe, of our Christian faith, that all people are gifts of God in all ways. And I think Joanne is also a gift of God. Yay. So how are your feelings about this?
Well, as an outsider looking at a total woman, I have some difficulty with it, and maybe that's why I'm single, because I can't quite get the gist of what is happening in it. How many of you have read it? How many of you, if you haven't read it, you have at least had reports on it? How many of you that haven't read it have read glowing reports about it in a very positive sort of way? Oh, there's hope in our media.
Has anyone attended a Total Woman seminar?
One?
Two. You've attended?
No, you wouldn't drag me to one. I read the book.
Someone told me just after the 11 o'clock session that they've heard they've developed a junior Total Woman package that they have on tapes and are giving to young girls in elementary school.
Is that somebody?
Somebody, is that person here who mentioned this?
Well, I think the difficulty that I find in it is the number of women that I know that have read it that think it's one of the greatest things going. And some of the men who have browsed through it think it's great. And I think it's an insult to the men just as much as to the women, in that they're saying what they really want is a facade, and that the facade is made up of the emotional being, of the physical being, and particularly the physical being, and using your intellect to con the husband into seeing himself as the leader of the band, and that there is no outward illustration of the woman having any sort of intellect except the intellect which would permit her to raise the children right and to know what it is the husband wants, and that she therefore can fulfill it. I find it very difficult to see the working woman, to see the thinking woman in the book as she talks about it. I think there are some very good hints for handling, as it were, men and manipulating men into submission. And the whole area on sex, I think, was very interesting. And one of the ways that women can get submission from the male, the tear product that the women are able to produce at will, I think is one of the very positive, not positive, but one of the very frequent ways of achieving the goals. So even though I see it as having a very negative kind of approach for women in marriage, I also see it having it a more scary approach, the negative, that it suggests that women should use all of their skill in manipulating men into feeling secure in the relationship. But when everything is said and done and the chips are down, these are some of the things that have to happen if you're going to follow this manipulation through, and if you really are going to make that adolescent happy who happens to be your husband, which is why I see problems with it for the male too. I would be terribly insulted if I were a male to think that there has to be absolute acceptance of all of the ideas, and when there's any difference of opinion, it must submit to the leadership of the male. It also states that the male must be the president, and the highest the woman should get is vice president, and then if they differ, the president wins. The king should make all of the decisions, and the queen should be beside him. She must adapt to his way of life because that's the only right way to behave. You must accept him no matter what there is to accept, and it doesn't seem very important whether he accepts her, except that he likes the seduction that's going on. But I found a very difficult time, particularly after hearing it had been in a religious book, that one of the titles of the chapter is Hero Worship, and the importance of worshiping, and she uses this word four times at least, that one must worship the husband. This hardly leaves any kind of room, it seems to me, for the biblical way of looking at Christianity. I have difficulty because of the masculine-feminine role, and partly with a touch of defensiveness about me because I'm in physical education. But she suggests that you pick out the most masculine trait and let him know how much it pleases you while you are exposing your most feminine traits. And it doesn't really say what those are. Let him show off his strength. It seems to me if I were a male and that I had the same strength as some animal, it would not be particularly significant to me. Then the biblical remedy for all, and this is why I really must be single, is that God's plan for women is obviously they must be under the control and the rule of the husband. And if you can't do this, then, quote, the negative implication then is to stay single. So you now know why I am single. And then I have trouble with the president and vice presidentship of it. And I had an even worse time on the vacation because the vacation plans all made. The husband wants to go deep sea fishing. She wants to sit in the sun. Obviously, you should go deep sea fishing, not sit in the sun. But they don't go deep sea fishing. She feels so guilty. It's a terrible day anyway. And nothing ends up happy because she did not follow his will when obviously it's his vacation, according to the book. So these were the problems that I had with it, plus the problem of you must hang, quote, you must hang on every word. That's what it says. And that you can cry and that he can't. And that the power, obviously, is in the male. And the worship must take place of the husband. And the husband's sports should be your sports. Obviously, I'm picking out the physical education kinds of problems. So as an outsider, untold as I am, that's what I'm
The Bible affirms personhood, right? Not necessarily that one sex is really above the other. Christian Herald last fall had a review of these several books, Total Woman, Fascinating Womanhood, and a couple of others which I don't remember. And they made quite a point of saying that Christ died to free us. But books such as Total Woman and such really put us back into the whole role of being the slave. And yet it's not the slave who does just the bidding of its master, but the slave who manipulates the bidding of the master. I started to keep track during the seminar that I participated in Well, no, I should correct that. You don't participate in a seminar. You endure. You sit through a seminar because it's a 3-hour lecture, broken every hour and a half or so by a 5-minute coffee break. There's very little discussion. It is a presentation to you without much opportunity to discuss the issues. Perhaps that would make it more than the 12 or 15 hour seminar, because there's bound to be some people who really would question some of the concerns being raised. But I started to keep track at one point at which of the number of times that the leader would say, and if you do this, then you'll get. And this was a seminar with about 50 women who are basically working class wives. And the leader was obviously 5 times, 10 times above working class pay, talking about, and if you do this, then you'll be able to go to Bermuda like I did. Or if you do this, then your husband will take you off to the Canary Islands like my friend's husband did. If you do this, then, and I lost count after a while, because in this particular situation, if their husbands even could have taken them to Niagara Falls, which is 150 miles away, that would have been great. Or even to Howard Johnson's down the street. There are certain characteristics that are not total. They are quite definitely economy segregated. You know, if you have a $50,000 salary, you can do certain things. If you have a $10,000 salary, you do some other kinds of things. And I wanted to say back during some of this, after she made some comments, and if you do this, then your husband won't even mind the bills when they come in at the end of the month. And I wanted to say, but what if you write out the checks? Then you've lost that benefit. What are some of the good things that come out of Total Woman? It talks about stop nagging, which is very good common sense. It talks about playing and praying with your children. That's basically good common sense. It talks about being interested in what your husband does, and let's hope that the reverse would also be true and that your husband would be interested in what you do. That's basically good common sense. Play acting, but when it overshadows a good amount of this with play acting and with manipulation and with conniving, spending a good part of your day thinking up what you can do to arrange a certain kind of feeling, that seems to be a bit one-sided and not exactly fair. It talks about find a good friend where you can arrange to trade off your children, because you obviously don't want your children around the house very much. When you want to meet your husband at the door at 6 o'clock in your saran wrap and big red bow costume. And I began to think, gee, I hope you have a good, strong relationship with this friend, or the friend isn't going to be a friend very long, because you supposedly have your children out there during the supper hour for the first week. Your assignment is to be ready for sex every day of the first week. Not necessarily just every night. You can't have your children around then. Maribel Morgan does have 2 young daughters, at the time of writing this book, maybe age 7 and 10, something like that. So they're not old enough to be out on their own. They're not old enough to really say, okay, I don't want you around for a couple of hours. A 7-year-old, you might want to check on what's happening. Not much is said about, other than send them off to your friend's house when you want to do some things. Let's see, what else?
Oh, just look.
Okay. Some of you have read it. You have certain things that you picked up as being basically good common sense. We can affirm that, and we can thank Maribel Morgan for reiterating it, for reminding us that these are basically good courtesy techniques that we would use with lots of people, and that we are in our life as Christ, children of God, that we would normally do these things as kindness, living out our love toward others, not just as words of wisdom from Maribel Morgan. Let's have some response from you as to your feelings.
She quotes a lot of Bible verses, and I felt some of them were taken out of context. Did you think that?
I would greatly agree. Pardon?
Isn't she Mormon?
No, she's not Mormon.
She's not Mormon herself.
Pardon?
Oh, yeah. That I didn't know.
and women. As I understand, from both from the woman who led the workshop that I was in and from what she led me to believe of Maribel Morgan's background, that both of them, both leaders, came from situations where the church had not been very important to them until they sort of tuned into this. And the last hour and a half of our session was an hour and a half sermon on the four laws that come out of Campus Crusade, really, and they handed out the little brochures that come out from Campus Crusade. And I know a couple of people who said, you know, I've been taken, and I did not intend to come to hear an hour and a half sermon in this particular way.
I feel when I read it, I enjoyed most of it. Mm-hmm. And most of it I thought it was good. It was good common sense. And I think in this day when we have so many broken homes, if this can help a husband and wife relationship, and if it can help glue the home situation together a little more, and with a few people it seems that I have talked to, it seems like it has done this,
mm-hmm.
then I think maybe we could just throw out what is kind of kooky and...
Okay. There are some basically good things, which I think you'd find in a dozen other books as well, without the overpowering, over-labeling of the woman as being the slave or the non-entity, and the man as being the all-being most powerful. Last night we heard a lot of men say that it was a burden that they were carrying, at having to be the basic decision makers constantly, not only in their job but in their family, and that this was a burden that was difficult to carry alone, that it would be much more helpful to share it. I do not see that sharing coming out of Total Woman, which I think puts that point in the negative column.
Now, she spends quite a bit of time with the children, on the children's chapter, too, doesn't she?
Quite a bit of time with using a lot of the verses from the Bible that says, if you spare the rod, you spoil the child. And I feel very strongly that I have yet to see a youngster that has been beaten into being a more humane human being. I think you need discipline, but discipline is not equated with spanking or paddling. I think there are lots of... This came out very strongly in my notes from the leader in about 10 Bible verses that dealt with the kind of...
I guess I got the idea that if you have children, there are times that you're going to be a servant of your children. And if you don't want to serve in that type of way, mm-hmm. don't have children. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's your idea.
And parent effectiveness training, Tom Gordon, gives us a little bit more help in this area of saying there are times you have to be honest with yourself and to use an I message of I feel, or I am not able to do this, to be able to speak out what you're feeling. Total Woman, in a sense, represses what you're feeling. It teaches you how to feel, not help you to describe what you do feel. It tells you that these are some ways that you ought to feel rather than helps you to deal with the feelings that you do have. And feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are. Feelings often lead to action. That's where we have some difficulties. But if we can understand what our feelings are and what they rise from, what's causing them, then we can deal with them a little bit more manageable.
There seem to be more divorces now among people who have been married for more years.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot of it in the later 30s and the 40s and 50s. And I think this kind of a book is the kind of book that women who are afraid their husbands might find another woman.
Mm-hmm.
This book says, be a doormat to your husband and he will adore you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, manipulate him.
And
being so I think it's saying, you know, if you want to really hang on to your husband now that you're getting older,
mm-hmm.
this is how you can do it.
There are perhaps a number of other books that might say this, give some solutions to these problems in a
much more positive
way. And, you know, the whole area of communication,
mm-hmm.
of working through problem solving. That's one of the big problems. Problem solving, I think, is one of the big problems in our time, and that we have not been taught effectively how to use it. George Bach wrote a book a number of 6-8 years ago called The Intimate Enemy, with the subtitle of How to Fight Fear in Love and Marriage. And I think that's very helpful in saying, you know, how can you deal with some of these feelings and some of the differences? People are going to have differences. People are going to fight. But can we fight constructively rather than fight destructively? And it's the destructive fighting and the non-solving of problems that lead to a lot of these divorces and differences. We come into marriage thinking that once we're married, everything is going to work out perfectly. You don't have to work at it at all. People work a lot harder to get married than they ever do afterward. And the ones who have happy marriages are the ones who discover you have to work hard even afterward. And the ones who have somewhat shaky marriages are the ones who worked before getting married and they gave up working at the relationship afterwards, because marriage holds you together after all, doesn't it?
Who's the author on that last book? Intimate Enemy.
George Bach, B-A-C-H. The gentleman here.
What kind of scares me about that book is not only that it sold 2 million copies, but the majority of those 2 million were Christians, perhaps, who were buying that book, and they were identifying this with the gospel, with the Christian faith, when it seems to me so much in there is contrary to the teachings of Jesus regarding human personhood.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me maybe that it's very easy for Christians to want easy answers to solutions and little set rules as how to live. We much prefer to live under the law than under grace. And that's one reason I think that somebody like Bill Gothard in this Chain of Command, people buy that so readily, because it's, again, living under laws, certain laws, and then you'll be, and your marriages will work out, your homes will work out, but it's living under a law and not under grace. But why is it that Christians who know the gospel and have access to that freedom want to get back under the law again?
Perhaps one of the questions that might be asked along with that is that, do most Christians really know the gospel? And are they tuned into grace, or have we been tuned in so long to the law? That would be a good question. And do we find it just because we're in a society that's so much instant solution, instant society, things are fast is better, faster is even better. Maybe now when things are slowing down a bit, we may take a time to look around at this again and to realize maybe 55 miles an hour is okay, you don't have to go 70 or 80. It's safer, uses less gas, depletes our energy resources a little less. But that we've lived, our culture is so much determined by instant answers. And so that we want a pattern. We don't want to have to work things out and take a little bit of time. Discussion certainly takes a lot longer time than somebody pinpointing an answer.
I think religiously it is scary for the woman who thinks that she has to revolve her life and around her husband's thinking almost more than her own Christianity. The only thing in here that suggests that the woman runs her life around God is when she gives some 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s towards the end. She gives it number one, priority is commitment to God. But there's absolutely nothing all the way through that would suggest that this be true unless it was done through the husband in it. And I think that's kind of a scary thought along with the rest of the problems. But I think it does have a reaffirming effect in almost divorces, perhaps in cases of women who are happy in the home. And they may well be doing a lot of these things, but not in a formula, but in because they are, in fact, that kind of a woman that does have, by chance or by something, a certain ability to admire, and that really is one of her positive characteristics. And we, I think, in some of the women's movement have been denying that. And that, therefore, I think for some women who it is a very natural, they're not putting on a facade. Mm-hmm. They do, in fact, admire and by nature are submissive. And that it is an affirming book that they would have done anyway. And that, therefore, that we need some kinds of positive affirmations for those that are by nature in this, and that it doesn't make them hero-worshipping, that they also have minds of their own that are working, but that this is really their lifestyle that fits them best. And I think there are those without the book.
Didn't she say, I mean, this is what, changing her ideas is what saved her marriage.
Yeah, but she's changing her ideas. It's a different person than I would accept the affirmation for. She changed her ideas in order to be submissive to her husband when she wasn't by nature. While I think the people that are reading it and are positively reaffirmed would be those who are by nature this way and finally see that it is an okay thing. She changed her ideas in order to be submissive to her husband when she wasn't by nature. It is an okay thing to be. And I think it's quite different because one is falsifying and one is the natural being. What is that?
The very fact that it has saved a lot of marriages and a lot of homes, I don't think it's necessarily a selling factor to the philosophy of that book, because you can save a lot of problems with law and order by putting people in a room and in a straitjacket and they won't fight you anymore. Putting them back under the law, you will save, you know, conflict. So I think just because a marriage or a family has been saved doesn't mean it's been good. You may have used a bad means to save that by dehumanizing somebody, by taking away their personhood, and just causing them to be submissive rather than being free as Christ would make it. So just because it has had success in homes doesn't make it a good philosophy, because a lot of philosophies can bring order out of chaos.
Well, you still need law and order in a home, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You can't, it's got to be more than just freedom in Christ and grace. I mean, you've got to have, well, I guess I didn't react quite so negatively to the book. I guess I just took out of it what I thought was, you know, seemed good, and it doesn't seem to me that it could do people as much harm as some seem to think that it would. I can think of other books I would rather they wouldn't read than that one, which, you know, seemed to be okay.
My mind is going lickety-split, and I'm not sure all of my thoughts will come out in any kind of an order, but it seems to me that this book is very, very manipulative, and I really resent that as a Christian woman. However, from my study of the scriptures and from being in studies with Christian women who are very much liberated and in many instances have careers and all, that the scriptures teach that wives are to submit to their husbands, and that husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. So it seems to me that in a marriage relationship, we love that other person. We put him first. Wives, put your husband first. Husbands, put your wives first. Otherwise, it seems to me it's just going to be a selfish, do-your-own-thing jag. And I don't see how, you know, the family can really survive when women get so hung up on, you know, doing their own thing. And that's not to say that careers are bad at all. I'm not saying that. I hope I don't infer that, but I do think it's a matter of priority. You know, women are, I think, tend to go off to an extreme a little bit, and their priorities get all mixed up, and men do too. You know, men get all involved in their jobs, and they forget their wives and their family. And so I think if we really take seriously what God said about loving our husbands, and husbands loving their wives, that families wouldn't be in the position they are. I do tend to think that it begins with the woman, but certainly it's not
always. But there is a kind of 50-50. You're saying husbands love your wives, wives love your husbands. That means that perhaps together they can work out whatever their problems or whatever the issue of conflict is together, rather than one saying, okay, you've got the words and the wisdom, I'll listen to you, and
yes,
nothing that comes out of me is going to be worthy or worthwhile because I'm just little old me.
Oh no, I think it's important that you share, mm-hmm, but I think when it comes down to the issue of, you know, what are we going to do, that someone has to make the decision, and as Christ is head of the church, I think, or I've understood that the Bible teaches that after you've shared all your thoughts and talked it out and done all your sharing, that if you still don't agree, that someone has to make the decision, and that it should be the husband as the head of the wife.
Which all works very well if your husband has the same idea of what a marriage should be as you do. But if he doesn't want to be the boss, what do? Avoid decision?
I think if he's happy to let you make the decisions, that's fine.
No conflict.
Fine with me.
Yes.
Are there any references in the book for the woman who's been married, her husband has died?
We are on total.
You're on total.
Then you find a new husband quickly.
That's what I should do. It does not deal with women who are working. And in a couple of the articles that interview Maribel Morgan, she said, things have changed somewhat since I've become sort of the head of this corporation of the total woman, with X number of hundreds of leaders throughout the country, and managing the kind of finances that go with this. I've had to do some rethinking. We still solve our problems in the total woman manner. But I've also heard something recently that her husband has stopped his successful law career and has become the manager of her corporation, which is...
The interview says he says we talk a lot and she says I cry a lot.
Yeah.
In it.
We still have some difficulties, she says. We're not.
Oh no, we try a lot, and she says, adds, I cry a lot.
Also, in an interview in Minneapolis, she said, gave the very distinct impression that when she's away and doing this promotion and running this corporation, and he's following in her train, that we rush home as soon as we can, and then I bake the bread, and I scrub the floors, and I take over again in my position as the subservient leader of this household, while I'm waiting desperately for my husband to return at the end of the day. You know, in the meantime, my whole day revolves around when he will be back. She rushes back to it.
How long ago did she write the book? And I'm wondering if there are any studies there. If you've met people who've been into this for a period of time, most of the people that I've met that are really gung ho here, I've just gotten in it and they tried it for a few weeks for a, doesn't last.
So do you think it would be a great subject for a dissertation? When I went to this, I really struggled. I only found out about it about 10 days before it was to happen. And I was trying to figure out how I could get permission to do a kind of survey of the people who did attend and then to be able to follow them up. And I didn't manage it at the time. And I asked if there had been any studies done on it of the people who were in charge, and they were quite new to it too, who were organizing it in our area. And the woman who came in as a leader came in late and left early, so there really wasn't much time to communicate with her on this. That would be very interesting.
You don't have any interest?
Nothing that I've seen talks about a long time. It talks about people. Her first total woman group was wives of about a dozen of the Miami Dolphin football players. Well, that puts them in a complete different ballpark than, figuratively,
field,
literally.
Field.
Thank you, Jack. Knowing what their salaries are and what kind of lives they live than I could ever imagine. It puts me completely out of the game.
A couple of friends who have really taken the total woman stand are both very dominant women. And I thought at first one good thing about it was, well, gee, maybe they will now learn a little bit how we share life as husbands and wives. But what they've really done now is they've given their husbands permission to make decisions and to be the boss, and really are still completely domineering, but pretend that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting to watch.
It's very much still in control, that you're acting the role. It's a new role. It's a new role-playing situation for your life, because it is still quite a bit in control of what's going on, what you will allow. One of the things that I was very impressed with is that in the Total Woman Seminar, and I suppose this varies with each one who's gone through it because of the leader they have, she states, first of all, no tape recorders allowed, no men allowed. There was one woman who was in there with about a six-week-old male baby, and the woman said that this might be the first male in history who has ever attended a total woman seminar, and the mother kept the child there because she was nursing it. But she gives a huge amount of personal illustrations of what she's gone through. And if I were to pick out these pieces, which I did at one point, it would be a youngster who grew up in a female who grew up in a fairly affluent family, who was a very headstrong female, and she would say, I was very selfish. I was very stubborn. This particular one. I've seen some interviews about Maribel Morgan describing herself in some of these same terms, not all of them. Went to a prestigious college, had all sorts of glamour and beauty awards, and Maribel Morgan says that about herself too. Married the jock on campus, who had a prestigious position in athletics, and went into a prestigious job, and many of them have said their salaries, even, they're usually over $50,000, which puts you, what, in the top 1%, 2% of the income of the country? Were married in the church, perhaps, and had nothing to do in the church. So that when they took on Total Woman, it was a real conversion experience, not just in their way of acting, but their whole way of believing, that they became very active converted Christians. Just fine. Our leader told about one time, she said, I was really very spoiled. I was very selfish and stubborn. I wouldn't listen to a thing my husband said. One day we were driving along to a place where he was going to a conference. And I was going along. And for some reason, his overnight bag was sitting on the seat between us. And we got into an argument about something. And he wouldn't listen to my point, and I wouldn't listen to his point. And she said, I don't know what took over me. But I opened up his overnight case, and I opened up the window and I started throwing things out the window. His hairbrush, his shaving cream, his toothbrush, and all he kept saying was to me was, you're crazy. You're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. It didn't stop me. I was angry. I was burning mad. And he wasn't listening to me at all. I threw his electric razor out. I threw his electric hair dryer out. He didn't stop. He just kept saying to me, you're crazy. So in a sense, maybe that the change from this kind of lifestyle is a great improvement. But an interview with Maribel Morgan talks about their children. She might say no to her daughter to some particular request, and the daughter will go to her husband or wait until her husband comes home or the father comes home and ask the father, and the father, without thinking too much about it, may say, sure, go ahead. And then the daughter comes back and say, Mom, you've been outvoted. You know, which I think is really teaching these children some very bad habits.
I'm a little bit concerned about the ability of people like her and others to use Bible verses and then to get people to believe that it must be so. And because of that, I'd like to go back to Susan's question, which I think is a good one, an honest one. How do you handle then the Apostle Paul when he says, be submissive to your husband, or the husband is the head of the wife? And that does not sound like equality. The husband is the head of the wife. And yet we're talking about equality. So how do you handle the Apostle Paul in a situation like this?
Doesn't Paul also say later there's no male or female?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So which verse of Paul are you going to take?
Well, it depends if you're for ERA, equal rights.
Well, you have to remember Paul speaking in the social context of his time, too, when woman was property.
Right. Besides, he's single.
Right, he was far ahead of his time then. And as I understand that,
each was in a different context, too, wasn't it?
Right, but if the husband gives all to the wife, then it would be natural the wife would give all to the husband. I don't see any conflict there.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it true, in our scope study, it seems to me when we studied that, the husband is to love the wife, and none of our verses said the wife was to love the husband.
It was to obey.
Yeah, everything else but love. And if he had as great a love as Christ had, there wouldn't be any problem. Mm-hmm. But nowhere is the wife ordered to love her husband.
But we're all ordered to love our neighbors. Yes,
it would certainly be.
We have to think of it in a broader perspective, right, that our neighbor can also be our husband or our spouse.
And that Ephesians section on submitting starts with submit yourself to one another.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that kind of a statement then. So
then it goes into further detail, you're saying.
But submit to one another.
Maybe he was dealing with some riotous wives, and that the husbands were already submitting, and he's just reminding the wives to. I'm being facetious now, I guess.
Right, weren't Paul's letters for definite reasons to specific people?
And to different people.
And for specific problems.
You have to consider who he was writing to at the time and what the specific problems were. Why did he write what he wrote?
And
because of the problems in the church where the people to whom he was writing.
Well, and taking, if you can just look at Paul also says, don't get married unless you just really got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that would leave
better to there in hell.
Yeah. But when you look at it in the amount of time that he saw was left before the second coming, that this would just take so much time to have the marriage. But if you just look at it in a straight frame of reference, then he also was against marriage unless...
You would say that it is possible for there to be a marriage where there is no person who makes a final decision. There can be equality in marriage, and that is can be both biblical and practical.
I think that's always a possibility, but I also think there are times in which, in some issues, my husband is more capable of making the final decision, and in other issues, I'm more capable of making the final decision, because we each have our own talents and our own gifts, and we each may have been more informed on the situation more than the other. In one situation, one might know more about what was going on than in the other. So that you may come to it with different amounts of information from which to make that final decision. And that you can't.
Who makes the decision? Who's going to make the decision?
Well, I think that's communication between husband and wife.
And can't there be consensus?
Yeah,
but when there isn't.
It sounds as if most...
Kind of each as two adults. When it is something that's a crisis of whether the marriage stays together or not, you maybe choose to do differently too.
Mm-hmm. There's also the technique of problem solving, which is spelled out in a number of places, including parent effectiveness training or teacher effectiveness training, where you look at all the possibilities and then you brainstorm all the possibilities, then you go back and discuss them and cross out which ones are unacceptable to you. And if you've got any kind of creativity and concern, you're bound to come up with some that are agreeable to both of you. Maybe some one more involved with it and one a little less, but then part of that is deciding, okay, let's give this a try and let's come back and review it in X amount of time and see if it's working out. If it isn't working out, then you try something else. But this is not saying that once you've made a decision, that's it forever. You can't ever admit that you've made a mistake. And I think that's a difficulty that many of us as adults have, that if we've made it, and we've had a president who had this too, if we've made a mistake, we cannot possibly admit that we were ever capable of making a wrong decision. And I think we're all human. And that we may make decisions with the best intentions, and they may not work out. So we go back, say our apologies, ask forgiveness, and try again.
And the situation changes too from day to day and hour to hour. And what was an applicable solution yesterday or last week may have to be an adapted solution.
One kind of way of looking at the total woman is that it's a life plan. It gives you a prescription to follow. And an alternate of that is what we might call a process of being or unfinished, where we know what works now, or we're trying to work through what's going to work now. We know where some of our questions are, and we feel that there's a hope, and that we live under grace, that we are in a constant process of becoming. We never become a finished byproduct. There's always room for growth. There's always room for change. There's always room to become. Because we go into different situations and we may have to deal differently with them.
I notice that we all agree that we live under grace, but I've never heard of any men named Grace.
That's interesting. Hope, faith, grace, all female. Why should that be limited to just females?
Hope is a friend of mine who's a man.
Mm-hmm. You do? Oh, that's good to know.
Do you have any knowledge of the marriage encounter programs to strengthen good marriages?
I've heard some very, very positive things about them.
And how, if you do, would you contrast maybe something like this that deals with the relationship between the husband and wife and an exchange between the husband and wife where Marable Morgan's is more, you know, at the foot of and at the head of type of relationship? And I know that the marriage encounter that in the Minneapolis area came through the Catholic Church, that there's a very strong movement and a very healthy movement now where there is a Lutheran marriage encounter, not because you can't cross the boundaries and go to the Catholic one, but because the Catholic marriage encounter really ends with the communion service and you are barred from participation in that, therefore the Lutheran.
That particular point is the only negative thing I have really heard from couples who have gone to marriage encounter, is that you're so much a community and you work through so many very difficult areas, but then in the end it ends with the communion service that only the Roman Catholics are allowed to participate in.
Which is and, the reason for starting their own.
And I would say that I'm glad to hear that, and there's a lot of this movement in Methodist Church for marriage encounter, that we can use all of these that we can get. As I understand, there was someone here last week who was from the Minnesota Couples Communication Program, which is also very good.
I've been to the marriage encounter with my husband in Washington State. I had communion. I mean, if anybody wants to ask me about it, just see me around.
Oh, good. Would you like to make...
I think it's different in every encounter.
Depending upon the leaders and the people involved.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I would recommend it for anyone.
Would you describe the basic, as it deals a lot with looking and thinking and tuning into your feelings and communicating them in some way, either by writing them, most often by writing them out, and then discussing them. And one of the things I've heard a couple people saying, it may be just the form that they were through, is that when you get into discussion, there's a lot of feeling, do I want to say feeling contact, that you're less likely to become angry with what somebody is saying if it's differing with you, if you have some actual physical contact. I mean, you may be facing each other, you may be holding hands across, or you may have the hands on each other's knees, so that there's this kind of body contact with each other as you're communicating some of the things that maybe the other person hasn't heard before and may not be the happiest to hear.
And also remember that you're communicating with your spouse.
Yes.
It is not where you are, your whole weekend is spent either separately or, I mean, it's not a group session where you and another couple are sharing back and forth, or you and another wife or another husband.
And it's
between you and your spouse.
And it's a private sharing. You go off to your room or to separate rooms and you come back together again as a couple, and what you're telling to each other never gets known by any of the other people. So
it's
that
not a group therapy session.
If you're concerned that you're going to have to bare your soul to X number of other strangers in the group, don't worry about it, because that's not the situation, right?
Right.
That the people who may be in charge may talk about some of their experiences, but you do not have to feel that you have to open up your soul in front of everyone else. The only one you really need to share these feelings with is your spouse in your own private room, which for many people is the first time you really get down to some issues. Probably not because you didn't want to, but you may not even have thought of these. You're so busy with the whole details of surviving that you haven't had time to really think of some of the things that are important to each other, to set some of your feelings out in front of the other person, set some of your goals. Look at what some of your concerns are. What are the burdens that you might be carrying that we may not have realized the other one considered as a burden?
You're saying when all is said and done, that it's a cooperative answer in mm-hmm. the question that George asked about mm-hmm. in final decisions.
Mm-hmm. Much better work through with the people involved rather than a stamp coming down from a position.
I mean, one good thing about marriage encounter, if the couple needs the support of of a group of people around them after the encounter experience, there's lots of opportunity for that. My husband and I have chosen not to be part of the ongoing community of people who have been to encounters or to go to refresher courses. But for people who need the support for 5 years in this attempt, there's a large framework. You're not just left dangling afterwards.
They
need it.
Yeah, and don't they also say in their material the marriage encounter is not for families or couples that are already, who have already fallen apart. It's not a glue factory.
It's for good marriages.
It's for marriages who want to improve them. I mean, that are okay from there on up, who want to make them better. But if they've already fallen apart, don't expect marriage encounter. There may be cases in which it can improve them.
No,
but they don't intend to be a couch or a marriage counseling clinic for people who have already decided to separate.
I think that they very definitely say it's for good marriages to become better. And again, with that thing in mind of thinking of life as a continuum, that we're all in the process of becoming, and that your marriage from where it is now can become richer and fuller, and each of you can grow within that relationship.
That, I think, is a very important point to bring out as we discuss the total woman, that it is for all people to grow, all lives to be enriched, and not necessarily one at the expense of the other, or that one does it because they want some return from the other.
We also have an engaged couples encounter now.
Mm.
That the thing is, this communication started before the marriage.
That's very important, and I
that would be more important.
And not just a couple of hour session, you know, not just a brief, you know.
It's well, they go into it planning to leave it if they don't.
Good.
And another healthy thing that I think I like is the education for parenthood is becoming so much, much more important. We become parents and then get into the midst of trying to solve problems without much expertise at all, and kind of by common sense rule of the thumb or the way you were raised, instead of looking at better ways of problem solving.
I think Minneapolis has some excellent things going for it with the Minnesota Couple Communication Program, Marriage Encounter, the Adlerian Family Parent Education for Parenthood kind of program.
Is somebody in it for?
Is there someone in it for? I don't remember.
And also a lot of healthy physical ed in letting young children be people rather than male or female oriented. I have a teacher in my elementary building.
Great.
Yeah, and they'll soon transfer them all to me.
How to help people be human and relate, you know, to the worthwhileness of all people rather than, well, it's more important to get to know boys because then I can be a total woman. You know, I think it's important to think of the total long-range project, of, you know, that we are God's children. We aren't just God's sons and on one hand, and God's daughters. We're all God's children, and this is important.
It's exciting to be a librarian and meet a librarian and work with the
to see that
really helps to have a place of pushing aside something that's less good than the
teacher. I think because the teacher, too, we have special units to show that how times are changing and that mom or dad could very easily take the opposite role and the kids just love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. This woman's 10-year-old daughter, she claims, is a woman's liver.
And that she could be president. If any woman is going to be president of this country, it could
it
be her daughter.
It doesn't fit what the woman is trying to advocate for women when she's proud of that her daughter is a woman's liver and will be a president.
And then saying that her daughter will know how to handle her family and
oh, yeah, but, yeah, she'll be president, but at home she will learn to be submissive.
Yeah. She'll know how to make her family happy. She's seen how a family should run, and I just wondered, does that mean her husband's going to make all the decisions for the country?
Thanks, I don't need it.
Doesn't she say that really the woman is to live her life through the
husband? Yes, that's, I had that underlined somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing of that he's...
Made a husband to God as an individual.
Well, that's the problem. The only time she ever really says God is first is in one statement. Everything else is God through the husband, which is really scary when the husband's un-Christian.